Let's do the chant, the drum dip. That'll be our opening prayer, right, that we'll be doing every time. So since we're doing it with Swaras, just repeat after me, okay? Om Bhadrang Karne Vishnu Yama Devaha.
Om Bhadrang Karne Vishnu Yama Devaha.
Bhadram Pashe Makshabhirya Chitraha.
Bhadram Pashe Makshabhirya Chitraha.
Stirai Rangai Istishtivagum Sastanubihi.
Stirai Rangai Istishtivagum Sastanubihi.
Yashema Devahitam Yadayuhu.
Yashema Devahitam Yadayuhu.
Swastina Indro Vriddhashravaha.
Swastina Indro Vriddhashravaha.
Swastina Pusha Vishwavedaha.
Swastina Pusha Vishwavedaha.
Swastina Starksho Arishtanemihi.
Swastina Starksho Arishtanemihi.
Swastino Brahaspatir Tadatu.
Swastino Brahaspatir Tadatu.
Om Shanti Shanti Shantihi.
Om Shanti Shanti Shantihi.
Okay, so we did verse 1 and 2. In verse 1, Ashwalayana is the sage who is seeking. He was a sage of the Rig Veda, the rishi of the Rig Veda. He's seeking knowledge. Means having studied and actually taught, being a teacher of the Rig Veda, he then, you know, became a mumukshu and realized, I know all of this. I know all of these karmas. I know all of the dharma. I've been following all of these things, but I don't know myself. And I don't know if there's anything about me that is really free, you know, free from change. Is there anything free from all of this papa and all of these type of things? So anyway, he started out by saying that the Upanishad starts saying that Ashwalayana properly approached Bhagavantam Padameshtunam. It's actually Brahmaji. He approaches Brahmaji, and having properly approached him according to Vidhi, you know, politely and with respect approached him, he said to Bhagavan, please, hey, Bhagavan, please teach me this Brahma Vidya, this knowledge of Brahman. Brahman is that which is infinite, that which is the self of the whole creation. And in the Vedic tradition, a person would know Brahman is the self of the creation, and that aham brahmasmi, I'm supposed to be that Brahman.
Yeah.
Right? And of course, Ashwali, you know, would know that. Ashwalayana would know that. Because he knows the whole Veda, right? But he doesn't know what it means. So he would know the Mahavakya, aham brahmasmi, I am Brahman, and that Brahman is the self of the whole creation, the reality of the whole creation. But how is that? How could that be? Please teach me. So he says, please teach me that sacred knowledge, brahmavidyam, that knowledge which is varishtam. There is nothing greater than that knowledge, that knowledge which is the most exalted. And that knowledge which is always being cultivated by the dharmis, by the good, by the mumukshus, by the dharmis, the ones who hold that. The whole Vedas, really, that's the pinnacle of the Vedas. That is the highest knowledge to be gained. It's what completes the human being. It's the knowledge which is moksha, which is liberation. So it's Brahma Vidya is known to be moksha, liberation. So you would go to a teacher and say, please teach me this. How they're going to teach it, what exactly it is, how it is I am Brahman, they won't know, but they know that this is what they need to know in order to gain liberation. And then even to know what liberation is, that needs to be taught. But there is such a thing as liberation, freedom from suffering, freedom from sorrow, freedom from limitation. But what exactly that means, really, if somebody were to ask you, what is liberation? Well, liberation is freedom from suffering. Well, that's the end of it. That's your three-word definition of liberation, but there's a lot to know about that. What is that? What does that mean? And how how do I gain that? And how can knowledge give me that? What is that all about? So this has to be taught. So he says this Brahma Vidya, which is always being sought and is held in the highest esteem by the Sadbhis, by those who are good, by the Dharmis, by the ones who are held within this Vedic tradition. This is what is being valued and sought. And it is this Brahma Vidyam which is also Nigrudam. It is hidden. It's placed there in the Buddhi. You know, it's placed in the cave of the Buddhi. It's in Buddhi, which is like a cave. It's placed there. It's there in the cave of the Buddhi. We call it a cave because it's there, but it's not known. Like if you look into a cave, it's dark. If something's in there, you can know it's in there, but I can't see it. Right? So I know it's here. It's in my buddhi. I know that, in fact, it's my very being, my very self. But I don't know what that is. I don't know where it is. I don't know what it is. That's the ajnanam. That's the ignorance. But he says, now, please teach me this knowledge. Then he says, by which, by knowing which, quickly, achirat, all the papas, all of my papas, all of the impurities, all of papas are sins. But what are sins? What we look at papa is that which gives me pain. That's why sin is not really a good definition. Sin is that which will result in pain, will result in situations in next lives, it will result in situations that will cause pain. Right now, if one does a papa, it will cause me emotional pain right now. For instance, if you're cruel to somebody, that person will suffer your cruelty, but you also have to feel the force of that cruelty. So you also will suffer. So we kind of just reap what we sow. We always get it back in our face immediately. So that's papa. And for punya, which we would call merit, or something which is more harmonious for the universe, that punya is something that gives me peace. That's what we get back. And say in the next life, if we look at punya and papa as the karmas that will cause us to take another birth, the punya karmas will cause us to have situations that give shanti, that give a sense of well-being. Just in the physical world, like you can have so many situations in your life that are conducive to your happiness. So they're meant to make you happy. And then there's the whole other side, you know, of situations that are not conducive to your happiness. If you are happy, you're happy in spite of the situation. That's a good thing. We can be happy in spite of the situation, but the situation isn't really designed to make us happy. So this is the world of punya and papa. But take papa like this, that which negates that which gets rid of all of these papas, all of this pain that I'm suffering, you know, and all of the situations by way of being in the world that is causing me pain. It gets rid of it quickly, it says. Parat param purusham yati vidvan. By that knowledge, that Brahma vidya, by which the vidvan, the one who knows it, gains this knowledge, that person goes to that purusha. Yati means goes. So that purusha goes to that purusha, which is parat param, which is higher than the highest. That's a name for Brahman. You go to that self, not through travel or through karma, but you as though go to it through knowledge, because there seems to be a distance between you and that self which is free. And so we as though travel to that self. We travel to the self that we already are simply by removing the ignorance. So in fact, there's no going. There's an attainment. Prapasya praptihi, there's attainment of something that is already there. But that attainment is brought about through knowledge. And so this is the verse that we worked on last week. So please give that knowledge which will remove all of these papas in short order, and which will give me knowledge of that, will give me that purusha, that self which I seek. So that's where we left off. And so now, so we repeat after me, verse 3. Tasmai sahavacha. Pitamahascha.
Pitamahascha.
Shraddha bhakti jnana.
Shraddha bhakti jnana.
Yogadavehi.
Yogadavehi.
So, tasmai saha ha. I'm breaking the sandhi. Tasmai saha ha uvacha, that a plus u is o, ha uvacha, pitamaha cha, shraddha bhakti jnana yogat, shraddha bhakti jnana yogat avehi. So now, pitamaha means the grandsire, like the grandfather. It's a name of Brahmaji. Because Brahmaji, in the mythology or in the story, Brahmaji actually was the father of the 10 Prajapatis who were responsible for the birth of the human beings. And so since the Prajapatis, 10 Prajapatis, I don't have a lot of knowledge about the mythology, but just to give you an idea, these 10 Prajapatis are responsible for the birth of the human beings around the globe. Now, their father was Brahmaji. Brahmaji gave birth to the 10 Prajapatis. The 10 Prajapatis gave birth to the humanity. And so that makes Brahmaji our grandfather. Because we come directly from Prajapati. You know, there's 10 of them. And then he gave birth to those. Okay. So when we say, so he's referred to as the Pitamaha. Means the great father, means the grandfather. For the grandsire. Okay? So this Brahmaji.
Pitamaha translation is grandfather or great father?
Great father, but they call grandsire grandfather.
Oh, okay.
Okay. It's a, if you say great father, it has to have the sense of grandsire grandfather. Okay? Because of being the one who gave birth to the Prajapatis. Okay? Okay, so here it says that Pitamaha, that Brahmaji, Uvacha, he said. That ha means kila. Ha means according to the tradition. Right? So according to the tradition, Brahmaji, who is the grandsire, he said to him, to who? To Ashwalayana, who is the great, the sage, okay? The one who's now coming to Brahmaji for this teaching. So he said to him, avehi means, may you know this. May you know this. As I will teach you, may you know this, from Shraddha Bhakti Jnana Yoga. What he's saying now, as it says in the Bhasha, and by the way, Vidhitatmananda, who's written this book, that the handout that I've given, he's following this particular Bhasha and unfolding it really nicely. So this is not Shankara's Bhasha. Shankara did not write a Bhasha on the Kaivalya. But so everybody follows this particular Bhasha, right? And so Vidhitatmananda, who's written this book that I've handed out, his fault is following this bhasha, referring to it throughout. So, now, this is the thing. Ashwalayana comes to Brahmaji, and he says, please teach me this knowledge. And Brahmaji, instead of answering him, says, well, you will know this through Shraddha, Bhakti, and Yoga, and Dhyana. And so then the question comes up in the Bhasha, is Brahmaji putting him off? Because Shraddha, Bhakti, and Dhyanam have to do with the qualities that the seeker, that the student is going to need to be able to understand this knowledge. So instead of Brahmaji giving him the knowledge, he tells him what he's going to need to have, the attitude that he's going to need to have in order to gain this knowledge. So then the question comes up, is Brahmaji putting him off? Because there are some other, in another Upanishad, don't remember the details of it, but I can tell you what happens. Some disciples go to the teacher, I think they go to Indra, in fact, for knowledge. And Indra says, well, I want you to do this seva and some, you know, contemplation. And some service for a year, do this for a year, and then come back to me. Or you can do it here itself, I think he said, first time he said, I think he did this for several years in a row, actually. Do this seva, and then in a year we'll see. Okay? And so they stayed, and they did all of the seva, all of the service, and another year, I believe, that he asked them to do something again. And so this went on for a while, and finally, in the end, after several years, he did teach them. So now the commentator is saying, you may think that Brahmaji is not going to teach Ashwalayana right now, because he's not answering him initially. But in the commentary, he says, no, that's not what it is. He's not answering initially because Brahman itself is not an object, you know, to be pointed to. It's not an object that I can just reveal to you in words. Like, for instance, I could hold this cup up and show it to you, and now I could give you a lecture on the cup. Oh, I could tell you all kinds of things about this cup, you know. And you're looking at the cup, so the cup, you're having direct, immediate experience of this cup, right? It's here in front of you. It's no effort is required. And also, we have language. Our language works to point to this as an object, you know. But Brahman is not yourself. Your being is not an object in the creation to point to. You know, in fact, all of your sense organs and all of your means of knowledge that you have point in the opposite direction, right? If you think about it, yourself, the conscious being that you are, illumines your sense organs, illumines your mind, and your mind uses your sense organs in order to gain knowledge of things in the world. So, in terms of the way that we know things in terms of a subject-object relationship. Through my sense organs, I get an experience of the object, like cup. Through my eyes, I'm getting an experience of the cup. And then I learn all about the cup. So I gain the experience through my sense organs, and then I learn about it. And so here, I can't hold up a Brahman to you, you know, and then tell you all about it. Here, see this Brahman here? Now let me tell you all about it. Now, it's an odd situation, because we're talking about you, but your mind isn't, and the language that you have at your disposal and the sense organs you have at your disposal are not useful here. Right? They're all useful for understanding the world. No, but how are they useful for recognizing the one that's illumining them? Right? Your mind, all of the thoughts in your mind, etc., they're known to you. They're illumined. All of your sense data, it's all illumined. Like if I look at that painting over there, I'm getting a thought modification in my mind, which then I'm aware of. Right? Without my eyes are forming a thought modification of true to the painting, and now I become aware of the painting. Now, what do I have available to me to make the mind, I have the eyes available to me to make the mind form a modification of the cup or the painting or whatever I happen to be looking at, right? And then I can illumine it. Now, what is going to do that for me in terms of my mind, in terms of knowing myself? There's an odd situation here. The situation is this. You already do know yourself in terms of how we were, like in the meditation, for instance. You already do know yourself as me, as it's very familiar. There's nothing more familiar to you than yourself, this conscious being. And all we did in the meditation was to kind of calm things down so that you are now just kind of stripped to the simple, your simple self. Right? Without a lot of thoughts in your mind, without a lot of pains in your body, without a lot of agitation or things to think about, we tried to take care of all of those things so that we could make them quiet for the time being, so that I could just sit and be aware of my own simple presence, just this awareful being that I am. So all of us can do that and do that all of the time. You might superimpose it on your body and say, I, the simple self that I am this body, or I'm my body, mind. You might say all of these things, that's fine. But you're saying, you're still referring to you yourself, the conscious being that you are. Right? That's fine. On that very, what we call, general, you have in that very general level, we all know who we are. Where I'm a conscious being, I'm me. It's very simple. That's very general. I'm me. Now, if I were to say, well, who is that me? That's the problem. Starts right there. But I'm me is fine. And it's true. The me that you're referring to as you is the me that we're going to reveal in the Upanishads. That's the me we're talking about. So you have this, what we call Samanya Jnanam. I am me. I am me. But who is that me? That's the problem. What is that me like? Does that me survive death? Is that me one with the body? Is it one with the mind? Is it this me different from this me? What is this me? Right. So that's the particular knowledge that we're going to have to gain here, and that is the very intent of the Upanishad, is to give this particular knowledge. Now, how are you going to gain that? This is why Brahmaji decides to go this little circuitous route. Because how are you going to gain it? So just, if Brahmaji has to have a teaching methodology to give it to you. Because how can you gain it? You already are you. You already have the five sense organs. You already have a mind. Yourself is not away from your mind. It's not away from your sense organs. It's not away from your body. If you could know yourself, you would. So you already know what you can know. You already know that I am a conscious being. And in fact, that conscious being that you know as me, that it is that me that exactly that we're talking about. That's what I don't have the particular knowledge about. So how am I going to know what this self is in and of itself? Right? Because I can't take my mind and flip it around in a sense. My sense organs can't. Let me put it like this. Because we are going to flip your mind around a little bit, but we have to do it in the teaching methodology. Your sense organs can't flip around and look at you. They can look at your body, right? They can look at these objects, but they can't flip around and look at the one who's illumining them. Okay? And my mind, for all practical purposes, though we will flip the mind around, in a sense, on its own accord, all the mind is just thoughts. Thoughts, moods, emotions that I'm illumining. I say I'm illumining them because I'm aware of them. I'm aware of these thoughts. Any thought you have, you're aware of it, right? You can't say, oh, I don't know my thought. Of course you know your thought. I could just ask you to just sit quietly and tell me what you're thinking. Just watch the thought flow. Tell me what you're feeling. Watch the feelings. So you do have a subject-object relationship with the thoughts. But now if the mind were to say, yeah, but who's the one that's looking at these thoughts? Who's the one that's illumining the thoughts? What is that one like? What will the mind say? I don't know. You won't even know whether the consciousness that's illumining the mind is one with the mind. If there's a subject-object relationship, what will it say? There's no means of knowledge there. So you have the self-experience, basically. You have your self-experience without any knowledge of what the self-experience is. So this is a problem. And so now Brahmaji is not able to just say, see, Ashwalayana comes up and says, please teach me, give me this Brahma Vidya, give me this knowledge of Brahman. And so, but now Brahmaji can't just say, well, Brahman is like this and this and this. Here's what it is. This is Brahman. Brahman's like this. Well, Brahman's not like this. Brahman's not an object in the creation. What words are you going to use? You're going to say Brahman is tall, Brahman is short, Brahman is wide, Brahman is old. What on earth can you say? Brahman is black, Brahman is white, Brahman is yellow. Brahman doesn't have a color? Well, it doesn't have a color. You know? And what? You know?
It's weird.
You don't have any words? There's no, because there's, it's non-relational. It's yourself. It's not an object in the creation. So how is Brahmaji going to answer Ashwalayana? That's the problem. So what he does is he starts by telling Ashwalayana what does he need in order to be able to hear, to see what Brahmaji is going to be teaching him. So he starts by just talking about the adhikari, what it means to be, in a sense, a qualified student. What attitude do you, it's like saying it's from these attitudes, from this understanding, from this type of person, from this attitude, that your mind will be able to see what I'm going to say. Because the mind has to be, it has to have kind of a level of shanti, a level of peace, to be able to recognize the nature of, in fact, the one that is its very self. Right? So in order to recognize the one that is its very self, it has to have a certain level of relaxation and space to be able to see that. So we'll see that as we go along. But let's see what he says here. So he says, it's through Shraddha, Bhakti, and Dhyana. In the Bhagavad Gita, there's a verse, famous verse, that says Shraddhavan Labhate Jnanam. Means that it's only the one who has this Shraddha that can gain this knowledge, Atma Jnanam. Shraddha means that the mind has, we talked a little bit last week about this, the mind has what Swamiji will call faith pending understanding. Because the Vedanta, the Upanishad, is not, since so if you translate Shraddha as faith, we think in the West we'll think of faith as like belief, and like faith like a belief. Have faith, have a, you believe this. A belief that you can't really verify. You just have to believe it until you die, and then for instance in heaven, I believe in heaven. But there's nobody that's going to verify that, right? It's a belief, I believe it, but I'll verify it once I'm dead. Then we'll find out if there is a soul that goes to heaven. But I'm not going to find that out right now. You know, most likely not. Maybe somebody will, but somehow, I don't know how. But we say it's a faith. It's not a faith pending understanding. It's a belief. Here, Shraddha, we don't mean a belief. That it's a belief that is subject to verification. It's a belief now. It's a faith now because you don't know. You could, but if say you come to a teacher and you say, "Please teach me, who am I? What is the nature of Brahman?" You know, please teach me. So you come. So the student, the sisha, goes to the teacher and asks for this knowledge. Implied in that question, if they approach the teacher, is that they believe that that teacher can teach them that knowledge, right? And that that knowledge, that we call Brahma Vidya, the knowledge of the Upanishad, can deliver the goods. That the Upanishad actually has the capacity to give me that knowledge. And the Upanishad is something that is taught by a teacher. And so that means I believe, I have faith, pending verification, that this student, that this teacher can teach me this Upanishad, which will give me Brahma Vidya. That is Shraddha. Mm-hmm. That is a huge thing, actually. Because, well, I mean, if you think about it, who are you going to have Shraddha? I mean, that's a gift. They say that's really Bhagavan's gift. It's Ishwara Nugraha. It's the grace of God. Because how do you know? How do you know if a person can give you that knowledge? Or even that the Upanishad gives that knowledge. In India, at least, there's a whole tradition holding that. There's a tradition of teaching holding that the Upanishad has knowledge to give. You have to have that Shraddha that teacher, though, that Upanishad with that teacher has the capacity to give that knowledge. And without that, I could think, understanding the negative makes the most sense. Without that, how can your mind listen? It's not possible. I mean, even in relative learning, if you go to a teacher to learn a subject matter and you don't think the teacher knows what he or she is talking about, then it's going to be really hard to sit there, right? And then also the subject that you're learning, that you've decided to learn, has to have some usefulness for you. You have to think, this is something, if I learn this, this will benefit me in some way. And this teacher can teach it. So in a way, it's kind of a no-brainer. But without it, if you think about it, even in relative knowledge, without it, it would be very difficult for knowledge to take place. And so now here, of course, if the person doesn't have that Shraddha, and now we're talking about knowledge, which is very subtle. And I say very subtle because it's not something that we can just objectify with our sense organs. It is the very nature of the being that objectifies all experience that you have. So it is that self that actually indwells and is the very conscious, existent being that is present to every experience that exists. So just for you as an individual, yourself is that which is present to and illumining, objectifying, and present to every single experience, and so therefore, in a sense, is the most subtle. Right? Because it never loses that capacity of being present and of illumining. Right? And so there's going to be nothing more subtle than that. There's nothing underneath it. There's nothing underneath it that's more subtle. So it's kind of the bottom line in a sense. You can't go any deeper than that. Right? And so that self now needs to be recognized by the mind. A wandering mind is not going to see that. Right? An agitated mind is not going to see that. A mind that is thinking about this, that, or the other thing is not going to see that. Because why? Well, because it's going to see whatever it's thinking about. Like whatever you're thinking about, whatever your mind is thinking about, that's what you're seeing. So no matter what you're thinking about, yourself is there. But what is the mind recognizing? Whatever it's thinking about. Right? And so here this knowledge is taking place. But your mind isn't kind of glued on to the knowledge as it's being taught. And so therefore, it's not taking on that shape. Right? It's not taking on that thought modification. And so how can it see? Because what it's going to be seeing is whatever shape it's taking on. So Shraddha is the first thing that is necessary, because if that Shraddha is not there, your mind's not available in the first place. But say if the Shraddha is there, then what is next they have is what we call bhakti. Bhakti sometimes just means devotion. I'm sure we've all heard this word bhakti. We think of it in terms of devotion. But now you have to think of the word devotion in terms of gaining knowledge. Now that devotion becomes focus. Right? A person is focused. Their mumukshutvam, the desire for liberation, is there. I really want to know this. Right? It's the mumukshutvam. I want to know this. This is what I desire. This knowledge is what I'm devoted to. See what I mean by devotion? If you have devotion towards something, this is what is most important to me. And so that's the condition of a mumukshu, of a qualified student. It's not that this is just, you know, I'll learn this and then I'll learn this and I'll learn this. This is not one of the things. There are many, many things in the relative world that we can learn. Countless, infinite number of things. This is not one of them. This is the nature of the self. This is the nature of the subject. Not the nature of one of the infinite objects. So look at your situation. You are one subject. The things that you experience are countless. You could even say infinite. One subject, infinite objects. Right? One subject, infinite variety of experiences. Countless variety of experiences. Whether they be sensory experiences or just emotional experiences, they're countless and ever-changing. So where is my focus? What is important to me? Is it important to learn about this situation and this situation, this situation, this experience, this experience, this experience, this knowledge, this knowledge, this knowledge, this knowledge, this knowledge, and this knowledge? Is that what is important to me? You can say, yeah, that's what's important to me. And then I'll say, well, why is it important to you? Why is all that important to you? Well, because if I could learn this and learn that and do this and do that and learn this and that and this and that and this, then perhaps I would be happy. I would be complete. You know, if I could gain mastery in this and that and this and that, I would create completion, wholeness for myself. And that's why learning all of these things are important. Well, the mumukshu, the one who's desirous of liberation, is the one who has kind of realized that that isn't true. It's not at all to put down the value of learning all of these things. They have relative worth, relative usefulness. But the question is, will learning all of these things, gaining all of this knowledge, accomplishing all of these variety of things that we can accomplish, will they make me whole and complete? Can they do that? And Ashwalayana is, as that rishi, is the one in this Upanishad who realized, oops, it doesn't work. It cannot work by the very nature of the creation. As much as I know already, and as much as I can continue to learn and can continue to do, it will have relative usefulness, but it won't solve the problem of me. it cannot give me the solution of me, of my own completeness and my own wholeness. And so Ashwalayana has recognized this